Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Well, good afternoon or evening, wherever you folks may be, or even good morning, maybe. My name is Dan Holdridge. I live in New Hampshire, and I am a survivor of September 11th, 2001. I've been speaking now for over 20 years across the world on everything that relates to September 11th, and have some really important messages that I always care to share with audiences whenever I can about the lessons that I learned from that day. It's been wonderful to work with Ralph and be able to share my story to his classrooms for many years now. So always a pleasure, and excited to meet him in person here in good old Boston soon. So with that in mind, I'm going to take you guys on a journey. So if you guys have any other electronics and stuff, if you can just put that all away and think of it as just having a cup of coffee or soda at a coffee shop with a friendly guy that's going to tell you a story that could change your life. And that happens best when you have no other distractions and you just allow yourself to let this story sink in. The reason I tell this story is I believe that we all will have 9/11s in our lives of various degrees. And I feel very strongly that it's not so much the event of a 9/11 in our life that defines us or will define me, but how we respond to those events that happen in our lives. And that's what legacies can be made of. And so with that in mind, it's a pleasure to tell you my story. And then afterwards, if you have questions, feel free to put them in your chat, and I'll try and answer as many as I can. So September 11, 2001, it was a day that changed the world for everyone. I was working as a computer engineer for a company called General Dynamics, and I worked at a place called the United States Pentagon, and that is an amazing location. It's a huge place. The building is over 18 miles of office space, so it's a huge, huge building, and it's really the cornerstone or headquarters of the Department of Defense for the United States. So I was in there not in any military capacity. I was just there to install computer networks, kind of like the computer guy, if you will, your IT guy. And so I was there that morning of September 11th. I lived temporarily down in the Washington, D.C. area, just helping on this project at the Pentagon. And so as I was going to work on that beautiful September morning in 2001, not a cloud in the sky, and I got a phone call. And the phone call delayed me. And you're going to find sometimes in life that things happen for a reason. You're not quite sure why, but trust that they're usually for a good reason. And so when I was delayed with that phone call, it was a conference call that I had every 2 years, for over 2 years, every Wednesday morning. And for some reason, the woman called me and said, "Hey, do you mind if we have a Tuesday morning tonight? I know that's different from what we've always done, but that would help me." And so I'll make sure now, let's go ahead and go over the details. We got through our work. And when I hung up with her, I was up on the fifth floor of the Pentagon, because that's where you can get phone calls, because the walls were so thick, the cell phone coverage wasn't very good inside the Pentagon. So you had to be up on the top floor there for me to get the call. And so after I hung up with her, she called me back and said, "Did you hear about New York?" And I'm like, "No, what happened in New York?" She said, "A plane went into the World Trade Center." And I thought, "Oh my God, what a horrible accident." I mean, I think that's probably what most of us thought that day, that weren't directly involved with it. And so as I was talking to her, I let her know I'm originally from a state right next door to New York in Connecticut. And so I knew the Trade Centers, knew the size and scope. They're huge. And so I thought, what a horrible accident. There must be a lot of people injured. And then a few moments later, she said, "Dan, you'll never guess what." I'm like, what could be more? And so she said, a second plane hit the other Trade Center. And so one was an accident, two, it can't be an accident. So basically I hung up with her and I called my dad and I said, "Hey dad, it looks like our nation might be at war." He's like, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Go online. I'll let, you know, it's all there, dad." It's like, "But don't worry. I'm in the Pentagon. It's a fortress. I'll be okay." And so that was nearly the last time I talked to my dad. And so after I hung up with him, again, I was up on the fifth floor of the Pentagon. I started to go down to the first floor of the Pentagon. And I met up with my colleague, Bobby Shelby. And if you go to my website, danholdrich.com, you can kind of get a lot of these specific details. But I'm telling you kind of the broad story of it. But when I, Bobby Shelby and I had been working together, and he asked if he could take a smoke break before we went into the Naval Command Center, which was on the first floor. I'm like, "Yeah, go ahead. I don't smoke, but I'll go ahead and flip open my my phone," which had a web browser. It was the old flip phones, if you will, before we had these fancy smartphones. And so I started reading about New York, and I looked over to Bobby and I said, "Geez, Bobby, what's next? The Pentagon?" 3, 2, 1, boom, the blast went off. And so that's when everything changed. That's when all of our lives changed. And even those that weren't even alive that day, your lives changed from that moment on, even though you weren't there yet. And for what it changed, I think it's still up to us to determine what that'll be. How that means for our futures. But that day, the blast came down, picked me and my colleague Bobby up, threw us a good distance, and the building came down on top of us. We were knocked out. We thought, both of us had thought we had died. It's still hard 21 years later. And so we were able to push the rubble out and get out of the Pentagon. And I saw Bobby next to me. He had a pretty good gash on his head from the blood that was coming down, and but he was alive, and both of us were alive. And I just thought that there was a pillar that was right near us that it would hold up because everything else was falling down from the explosion. We were just in the right spot. If we were just a few feet ahead or a few feet back, the explosion would have taken our life. But I was saved for a reason. And I think part of that reason is to be with you here today, to share this story and somehow plant a seed of making a better tomorrow. So I went to that pillar and with Bobby, and we looked to the right, and that was the center courtyard area of the Pentagon. And then we looked to the left. To the left was the center courtyard. To the right was where our entrance was, but there was a fireball coming at us. That was from the explosion starting to spread. And so we went to the left, away from the fire, into the center courtyard, and people started screaming, "You've been hit, you've been hit." I had no idea what that meant. I looked down and I was covered in blood and soot and everything else. And I knew I was in trouble, and I could start to feel the pain. That cell phone that I was looking, browsing on, a piece of cement came out and smashed it out of my hand. So it saved my hand. And in my left hand, I had a clipboard, which was pretty awesome because I never really had a clipboard to carry around most days. And so I had one, and I just ended up flipping it up, and it ended up saving my face from all the glass and debris that came down and hit the rest of me. So just very, very, very lucky, very lucky. And so but going out to the center courtyard, I sat down and I started stealing people's cell phones off their waist. Everyone's like, "Here, you can have it, but it doesn't work." All the cell phones that were in the DC area, they didn't work that day. They jammed up because there's too many calls trying to come in and out at the same time. And so I wasn't able to call home. I wasn't able to let anyone know I was alive. And then a friend of mine came with a two-way radio, a walkie-talkie, if you will. And I could hear them asking if Dan was alive. So I grabbed that and I just said, I'm alive and so is Bobby. And so that started a communications line that at the time my dad had gotten a call from my sister right after the blast and said, hey, is Danny okay? And he said, yeah, I just talked to him a few minutes ago. He goes, oh, he's okay after the Pentagon was hit. And he goes, the what? And he didn't know that it happened. And so he tried calling my cell phone and there was no answer. And so he called my office, my main office, which was in the Boston area. And then he ended up getting a security person who forwarded the phone line all the way up the line to the senior executives there at that company, who was able to reach my former colleague in Arizona, who reached my other colleague who was in California, who called back over to my Arlington office, and they got word on the two-way radio that I was okay. So it took my family 90 minutes. If you have a piece of paper and a pen near your computer, I'd love for you to write that down, the 90 and then minutes, M-I-N-T-U-E-S, 90 minutes. It's going to be our reminder. It's going to be my early Christmas gift for you or holiday gift for you folks, 90 minutes. It took my family 90 minutes to know I was alive that day. For 90 minutes, they wondered if they could just say one more time, I love you, or if we could go on that vacation trip we always talked we were going to go on. If we could just one more time go fishing. If I could just tell you one more time how much you mean. Those 90 minutes. Your homework assignment, if you choose to do it, is to take 90 minutes. Take 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there. It doesn't need to be 90 minutes right away. But take 90 minutes and make sure you tell the people how you feel about them and make sure that they know how important they are to you in your life. You see, 184 people 10 feet from me didn't get a chance for that. And almost 3,000 people on September 11th didn't get a September 12th. And so September 12th aren't guaranteed. I think we've seen throughout the world, throughout our country, I know in the United States, but throughout the world, we've seen where lives are being taken needlessly and unexpectedly. And we find that there's so many regrets that people have. I've heard it several times, the greatest collection area of dreams that have been unaccomplished is a graveyard. And that's the thing. It's just a sad truth that there's not a September 12th for everyone. But the beautiful part of my message today is that you have those 90 minutes now. You have that time. So when we're done today, I encourage you to make sure when you go home, tell the people how you feel about them today. And if you're so inclined, make sure you let your teachers know the outcomes of that. What did your family have to say? I've heard some pretty amazing stories about how people told their families that they loved them. And parents that just started crying saying, I never heard that before and never knew that you felt that way. So I would encourage you to do that for nothing more than you're going to change the lives of people when you show love to them, when you care for them. When you see somebody sitting alone at a lunchroom, sit next to them. Be that person, be that change that you want to see. As Gandhi says, be the change that you want to see in the world. Be that change, be the person that's going to be different. It's really easy to be average, super easy to be average, to try and wear what other people wear, to do what other people do, to try and look how everyone else looks. No, it's the brave person, it's the bravest of persons that goes out on a limb to decide that they're going to be different and that there'll be a world changer. Life is limited, but the amount of love that you can give in this world is not. And that's something that I would encourage you to do. Every day, for this day being a new birthday for all of us, if we take it as that we have a fresh start of being reflective of all the gifts that we have in life, to never feel entitled to anything, because September 12th aren't entitled either. Every day is a gift. Every person you meet is a gift. And when you give that gift of yourself to others, when you share and you care about other people, especially that knows that need it most, the best thing that will happen is it'll be spread to the next person. September 11th can be remembered for the terror, the horror, the awful loss of lives. Yeah, that gets our attention. But what are you going to do with it, right? I think we have enough shock and awe in our lives now, whether it be, you know, wars that are escalating, people who are hungry, starving, without clothing, things that it's so easy for us to be involved in some small manner, because all of us can't do everything, but each of us can do something. Each of us can do something. So if my being saved on September 11th can mean anything at all today, it's that I'm going to encourage you to plant a seed of a better tomorrow. Plant a seed of a better tomorrow. Do that by volunteering. Volunteering at those to those that need it most. Volunteering to be a hero. In my book entitled Surviving September 11th, I start out my book by using the acronym for HERO, H-E-R-O, help everyone regardless of outcome. So being a hero doesn't necessarily mean you have to jump into an icy river to rescue somebody. It can be leaving a thank you note on your teacher's desk for thanking them for helping you become a better person, thanking you for discovering the gifts that you never knew you had. Perhaps it's putting a sticky note on someone you care about's screen so when they get there in the morning, they see that they're appreciated. I'd encourage you to all consider doing just something little, but something that will change the world. And then September 11th can be remembered for how great of a life change that we all made because of it, and not just because of the tragedy. So September 11th, after I was outside, I was carried outside into the triage area. We were given different ribbons. The one was green, one was yellow, one was red, one was black. By the medical staff, I got a green one, which meant I was going to survive. That was great. Bobby got a yellow one, which means that on his wristband that he needed treatment soon. And then there was red bands that people got, and that was folks that needed life-saving measures right away. And then there was a final color, black, and that was for people that had left us, that had passed on. And all four colors were laying right around me in the triage area. And that was, I'll never forget the sounds, the smells, the worries of, will I survive from that day? And didn't even get to the thought yet of what was I going to do in my second shot at life. I just wanted to get out of there and survive. And so a paramedic came running over, and Bobby Shelby, the guy that was next to me, in the Pentagon when it hit, we had gotten separated, but we got reconnected in the triage area. And a paramedic came running over and said, get out of here. There's a second plane incoming. That was the third plane that crashed in Pennsylvania, but we didn't know it. I had looked up and I could see there was fighter jets all around us, but I didn't think nothing of it, that we were still in danger. But I saw Bobby. He came over, gave me a hug and said, I guess we're bonded for life. And I'm like, yeah, I guess we are. Now let's get out of here. There's another plane coming in. So him and I went underneath a nearby bridge because we figured that if something was going to come in and crash, that the bridge above us would at least give us a shot to live. And a woman came driving down and she saw Bobby and I just sitting on the side of the road there bleeding, and a paramedic was bandaging us up. And she rolled down her window and said, get in, I'll take you to the hospital. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Yeah, yes, that would be fine. We need to get out of here. And so we hopped in this woman's car. Her name is Erin Anderson. I've mentioned it in every single presentation I've ever done. The thing is, there's an Erin Anderson in each one of us. There's an opportunity that when you see somebody that needs us, that we respond, that we find it in our heart to be that hero and help. And so she was sitting at home and just felt she had to do something, something or anything to help. And so so she ended up taking us to a nearby hospital. Bobby got transferred to another hospital to get some of the glass taken out of his head. He's physically fine now, as well as I am, from our injuries. We still live with them, but we live in spite of them. You know, we don't look at it as what had happened to us physically as the challenge. It's mostly the memories and mental part of that that day. But Erin Anderson decided to stay with me that day. She stayed right by my bedside, and that's where I was able to commandeer a phone, which was 90 minutes later. You remember 90 minutes? So that's when I originally, the cell phones all didn't work. So I was able to call out from a doctor's phone from there. And that's where I was first able to reach my brother, who by chance was home. And I just said, "Hey, Jim, grab mom's Rolodex," which, if you guys don't know what Rolodex is, it's our phone address books that we have now that are on our phones. It's a paper one that we had before the smartphones. And I just said, "Start calling everyone and tell them I'm alive." That's a pretty powerful message to receive. And so, wow, that September 11th, I mean, it was an amazing day where heroes were born, where heroes passed on, but new lives were given for all of us. And so whether you may realize it or not, things, whether how you go through an airport now, the security checks came from 9/11. There's a lot of different things in our lives that have changed because of 9/11 all these years, 21 years later. So there's still lessons learned, but the thing is, I don't want you to remember just the horrific part of that. I want you to remember that there's real human beings impacted by hatred from others. And we've got a choice every day to wake up with an attitude for gratitude or an attitude of entitlement. There's no middle ground. You can choose one or the other. But when we wake up every day, we can feel entitled to things. Think that I'm deserving of something or other because of whatever it may be. Or you can appreciate everything. Appreciate every moment. When you feel entitled to anything in life, you steal from yourself and everyone around you without even realizing it. When you think you're entitled to something, sometimes people feel entitled to a paycheck because they work 40 hours a week. Have you ever seen an unemployment line where people would appreciate a paycheck of any kind? Just appreciating it, that they could provide for their family. Everything in life can be appreciated, especially for me, my time with you today. And I literally appreciate Ralph and everyone who gives me these opportunities to share my story with you, because I hope in some meaningful way that you let go of everything that you feel entitled to starting today and start appreciating every moment as a gift that it is. That we're not promised a September 12th, but what you can do today, it's amazing. It's amazing of the person and the gift that you have, that you may not realize it. But once you start giving of yourself, you find your true purpose in life. I'll say that again. Once you start giving of yourself, you find your true purpose in life. Think about that for a few minutes. Really let that sink in, because it's only then, when you give of yourself to those that need it most, is when you find that purpose. A lot of people go and try and search for meaning in their life. I can tell you it's very easy to do, as long as you do it with a heart filled with gratitude for all you have. Don't think about what you don't have, and don't focus on that, because what you focus on is who you become. Focus on the things that you have and are grateful for. And when you have that, you'll find that you'll be grateful for everything else that comes along. And it comes every day with rejecting the thought that you're entitled to anything in life. That notion doesn't come easy. I'll tell you, it took me a while to really figure that out. But after all these days since September 11th, waking up every day and being grateful that I can hug my son and tell him that I love him, or to be able to see him play a sporting event, or to be a part of a family reunion, or to go and see the world that I've never seen. Everything is such a gift. And it was so, I was 10 feet away from not ever seeing anything, from being here with you on the Zoom call today, 10 feet. So with that in mind, it's a heavy responsibility that I carry to honor the 184 people that died those 10 feet from me. And so that's why I'm here today. I don't get paid to be here. I'm just here because I, in some way, want you to plant that seed for a better tomorrow, to plant the seed of gratitude. Now, there's a lot of stories that I could tell you from 9/11, and I could go on and on, but today I'm gonna wrap it up with just one more story about September 11th and illustrate why it's so important to walk in each other's shoes. Now, I hope you've heard that term before, learn to walk in each other's shoes. It kind of means to, if you haven't heard that phrase, it means to try and understand what somebody else is going through, to have empathy for somebody. On the 10th anniversary of 9/11, I went and I went down to the Pentagon and I participated in the 10th anniversary remembrance. And then after that, I flew back home and I talked in the high school in my community and gave the similar visit that I'm giving with you now. And then after that, I flew out to Wisconsin. I spoke to a college out there. And after the college, and it was a huge audience I spoke to, I opened up for questions, which is what I'll do for you folks too, if you have any. I'd encourage you to ask me anything and everything. Feel free to throw them in the chat feature and we can read them off and in case others have similar questions. After the talk, I opened up for questions and I've got some really a great variety of them. But the final one that was asked that evening, a small, short woman, nicest lady stood up and said, "Mr. Holdridge, your speech changed my life." I'm like, wow, thank you. Thank you. That's amazing. That's why I do what I do. Thank you. And she said, "Mr. Holdridge, I'm going to give you my shoes." "You're going to give me what? Your what? You're going to give me your shoes?" And she said, yes, sir. "I'm going to give you my shoes." I said, "Well, I mean, I didn't want to sound ungrateful, but I was like, I don't wear women's shoes, but thank you." And she said, "You don't understand." She said, "Mr. Holdridge, I lost my two sons." He said, "One was 10, who died of a medical condition. They couldn't find it until it was too late." She said his older brother, just a couple years older than him, thought the only way he could be with his brother again is if he took his own life. And so he committed suicide. She said, after hearing what you had gone through and how you're trying to make this world a positive place, a better place, after going through so much pain, she's the first person that, she said, "I was the first person that ever truly understood what it was like to walk in her shoes. And these are her shoes." This was 11 years ago that she gave them to me. They've been with me every single day of my life since then. I carry them with me everywhere. She came up there, gave me her shoes, gave me a hug, and said, "Mr. Holdridge, one other thing." I'm like, "Oh my God, what, anything? I mean, you changed my life." She goes, "My feet don't stink." I'm like, "Oh, good. I was worried about that. God, I'm glad to hear that." So, I said, "I'm going to carry him with me forever." So never forget the impact that you can have just being the kindness of your heart to reaching out to somebody and trying to make them feel a little bit better, to find that hero within inside you. It's amazing what we can do to try and take some of the pains that somebody else might be enduring at home that we don't know about. But the greatest gift that you can have as a leader is kindness. Kindness is the greatest gift that you can ever have as a leader. And so once you learn how to walk in somebody else's shoes, and then once you learn how to run in their shoes which means that you don't care about anything of their background. You just care about the person within and how great of a person they are and the potential for them to change the world. That's when we run in the shoes. That's when we become world changers. And so today I encourage you all to become the world changer and in some way honor September 11th by reaching out, taking 90 minutes, making sure you tell those people how you feel, and never forget that you can have an incredible impact in the life of somebody by the words we choose and the kindness we use. So, and that'll conclude my visit today, and I'm happy to take your questions. Ralph, is there anything that I can do?
Yeah, we have some questions emailed, and guys, keep them coming in the chat or you can email them. First of all, you are a world changer. And I love you and I appreciate you so much. And everyone in my household knows how much I value you and my connection to you. I have a question, and I've never asked this. Have you ever talked to the woman who gave you those shoes since? Or
No, we haven't. So one of the most difficult things is I never got her information. I reached out to the school where I spoke to and asked if anyone knew her. And they sent me a video, so I've got a photo of who she is, but unfortunately I wasn't able to reach out to her again, but I sure hope in some way she's going to be in one of my audiences one of these days when I cross through Wisconsin again.
That is, wow, that's just absolutely incredible. We have a question from Christina, and Christina, you had a pretty good question. You can go ahead and unmute to ask your question to Dan. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask how 9/11 and the whole Pentagon explosion impacted your life afterwards.
Sure, great question. How did the 9/11 explosion and event impact my life afterwards? Physically, it impacted me. I've been for 21 years, been going to doctors and physically just trying to strengthen myself all the time. Mentally, lives with me every single day. I hear things that people normally just are oblivious to, just because my body is always anxious to get out of a building or a room or what have you. On a bigger scale, every day I'm so thankful that I'm alive. I start every day with a gratitude walk. I'd encourage you all to do that as well. If every morning before, maybe on your way to whether it be school or work or wherever, if you take just 5 minutes every day before you engage in your phones and your computers and your work, and you think of five things that you can be thankful for and just say them to you in your head, just say, today I'm going to be thankful for my dog Boomer, who decided to come pay a visit. All the things, your family, your friends, your the home that you live in, the food that's provided, the most incredible people that will come visit you in Boston in December, you know, all the things that you're grateful for. If you can just start your day with gratitude, that's what you're going to focus on for the rest of the day, is all the things that you can be grateful for. And instantly, guarantee you, and I'd love to hear your stories if you want to share them later on, but instantly, it can change your life for the better and those all around you.
I love it. In the 90 minutes, I've had students, because Dan has told this to students who are now in college, some even in graduate school, where they took that 90 minutes and they went with it and telling their families they love them and they appreciate them on a daily basis. And it's truly life-changing. And I love that quote, plant a seed of a better tomorrow. It does not get more, I mean, that's the meaning right there. So we have a question from Ludovica. My apologies if I mispronounced it. Go ahead. You had a really great question.
I have a question. Do you ever feel emotional when you talk about this, I don't know how to call it, like traumatic experience? Like, do you ever get emotional?
Absolutely. And to be honest, telling this story to you all today, I relive it and the emotions start coming up. But the gift that I've learned is that through those emotions, I can reach and impact other people. And so I'm hopeful that you felt my emotions albeit it's sometimes a little bit harder through a computer screen, but I feel a connection to you and to everyone on this call today is that I'm pouring my heart out. And that's something that prior to 9/11, I probably wouldn't have been so, I guess I would have been more cautious, if you will, to share as much as I do. But I've also, in my book, I encourage people to use therapists and counselors, that it's one of the most healthiest things that you can do is see somebody when life gets too tough, and it gets too tough for all of us on any many number of scales or reasons. And so never be afraid to ask somebody for help, whether it be a teacher or clergy or a professional therapist of some sort. But yeah, emotions still, knowing that I'm living my life in hopeful honor and appreciation for the 184 next to me. That will always be in the forefront of my heart and my mind and how I treat everyone and how I appreciate every day. Ian, appreciate you.
We appreciate you. We'll go with a few more student questions, then we'll let you go. One of the students wanted to know, you know, I'll let her ask it. Alisa, you should be able to go ahead and unmute and you can ask your question. You had a pretty good question.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask you, when was the first time you were asked to tell this story in public and how did you feel? And by the way, it was a wonderful speech. I really needed it and you made me cry.
Thank you. Thank you. That means everything. Thank you. So the first time I gave my talk was, it was approximately 8 months afterwards. And a good friend of mine who's a high school teacher in Texas asked me to come and tell my story. And unfortunately, I really didn't have my messages of what I learned from it down yet. And so I told the story and I think I might have scared these lovely high school students quite well. And I felt bad afterwards. I apologize, but I just told them exactly what happened. And I hadn't really put out that message that I learned so much from. I think I was probably still trying to figure that message out when I did that. And through visiting with people, I've now talked around the world. I was on your on the BBC this last September 11th. It was wonderful to speak to millions of audience members and share the same message I get to share with you today. So thank you for that. And it makes me feel so much better. So I appreciate that.
And guys, if you haven't checked it out, go to danholdridge.com. His book is absolutely incredible, and there's a lot of videos on there. We're going to have some of those videos placed into the edits of today's production, and you guys will be sent it when we're done. We have a question from Sarah, and Sarah, you should be able to unmute to ask Dan one of the final student questions.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you if on the morning of September 11, you had the feeling that something was going to happen that day.
That's a great question. I don't think I've ever been asked that. Did I have a sense that something was going to happen? Honestly, no. It was just kind of odd that that morning I had that conference call that happened that delayed me. And that was odd. Because for 2 years straight, we had it every single Wednesday. And so that was kind of odd. And then after I hung up with her for that conference call, when she called me back, that's when everything changed. And so I never thought in a million years that they would hit the Pentagon. You know, it's been a defense fortress for years. And it was opened on September 11th, 1941, ironically enough. So, I had no reason to think anything would have happened to us. And the Pentagon is so huge. What was the remote chance that a plane could possibly hit me in a building that has 23,000 people in it? I mean, the remotest thing in the world. I mean, prior to 9/11, the thought of a plane going into a building was unheard of unless you were watching a movie. I couldn't have imagined or had no inclination of what was about to come. But I appreciate that question because, boy, everything afterwards, I hope in some way it leaves with you with a message of hope for a better tomorrow.
Every time that you talk to students and I'm there, every time I hear your talk, I always pick something else out. And I'm going to go with this for the final question. This will come from me. Can you talk to the students on, I know you touched on this, what does healing mean to you? I mean, we talk about physical healing from physical injuries, but nowadays there's not this much talk as far as mental well-being and mental health and the importance of if something's happening or something's going on, find someone to talk to about it. Don't just hold it inside. So can you talk about a little bit about the importance of that, how that helped your healing?
Absolutely. So let me connect something to you that you may not have thought of already. And this is going to be a really deep thing for you to think about. Everyone, all of us just had gone through this COVID awful situation, the COVID tragedies around the world. There wasn't anyone that wasn't touched by COVID in some way, shape, or form. Whether we got ill, somebody we loved got ill, people that we may have known have died. I'm going to tell you that that's a version of a 9/11 for all of us. That is a real life stops, put an emergency stop button in our life. And oh my goodness, this could have happened to anybody. And it was indiscriminate. Anyone could have been impacted at any given time. And so we all had a choice of how we were going to respond to something that we had no control over. Right? So we couldn't control COVID. And I mean, until the vaccines came out, we really didn't have much of a choice. We had to isolate, we had to wear masks, we had to do all these things that were recommended. We were missing all of our friends, all of our family from we couldn't see anymore. Every one of us had a traumatic experience of different levels because of that COVID tragedy. That's your 9/11. That is your opportunity right now to, you know what, let me look deep inside and figure out how that impacted me. It may not have impacted you as much as somebody else. Somebody else might have lost somebody else. So each one of us has an opportunity to plan a seed for a better tomorrow with how we help other people who are still struggling. This isn't something, when you go through a tragedy, 21 years later, folks, I told that story like it happened yesterday. The story that I've told, if you look at videos of me telling this story, it's going to be the exact same story that I've given for 21 years. It lives with you. So COVID had that situation where a lot of us were forced to stay home and secluded. I can tell you my son, he's 15, was having the most difficult time because he couldn't be around his friends and lost a full year of school with all the social things that were so important to him. You got to talk about it. You have to talk about it with people. Not one of us is immune to what's called PTSD. It's post-traumatic stress disorder. That's what I live with from 9/11, but I've also learned to survive and then thrive through that in spite of what that causes. It causes us sometimes for depression, you know, to feel depressed, to feel sad inside that sometimes things happen we can't control and there's not a lot we can do. And so it forces us to really struggle to find meaning. And when you feel that struggle, I am going to guarantee and assure you with my whole heart and soul, you are not alone. You are not on an island. You are not alone. You have people that love and care for you that will help you navigate through that very difficult time. The biggest and strongest person I've ever met will be the person that asks for help, right? And the greatest leader is the greatest leader is the one that has the most ultimate level of kindness in their heart and in their works. So if you see somebody that you think needs help, be that hero. And even if you don't feel strong enough that you want to speak with them, go talk to somebody that can go help them, whether it be a guidance counselor or another teacher or a colleague or what have you. But nothing's going to change if you don't decide to be that change, right? And so if we know that we can help somebody, the easiest thing to do is to look the other way, but that's just being average. I'm challenging each of you today to be extraordinary. And extraordinary people are the ones that look beyond themselves, that they don't feel entitled to say, it's not my job. They feel appreciation inside them to say, I value everybody around me and I'm going to help whoever I can in whatever way I can. And that's how we make better tomorrows. That's how we prevent future 9/11s from ever happening again, is when all of us stop feeling entitled to anything and we all start appreciating everything we have. And when we spread that love and appreciation around this world, it's amazing. It's amazing how great a place that we can live in. And I am sure proud to be a part of a place that could have all of you in that, sharing the love and kindness for everyone that you meet.
Thank you so much, Dan, from the bottom of my heart. And I know the kids are very appreciative. And we thank you for opening up and sharing your story with us. I know it can't be easy, even after all this time. So guys, thank you very much for joining us today. I have the Edutainment link up. We have a lot of great guests next week. Live from Ukraine, Slava Medvedenko, Los Angeles Laker champion. He's going to be talking to you guys. Lieutenant Colonel Waldo Walderson. He's a retired fighter jet pilot. And then live from Italy, you will have an astrophysicist. So feel free to sign up for any and all of these. But Dan, before we let you go, I'm going to allow everyone to unmute. And can we all say thank you to Dan before I end the meeting for all? So thank you so much for sharing with us, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.